You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Hope you guys are doing wonderful out there, and thank you so much for being here and being a part of the shows. As well, watch us on YouTube. Not only are we doing a podcast, but we're also streaming live streams every night on YouTube at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So be sure to find us there, and make sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranormal Portal Radio, as well as Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And if you guys have a story of your own that you'd love to share or have me share on the shows, by all means, please reach out to me. Our email for the show is paranormalportalradio@gmail.com, and I'll love to hear from you and hear what you got to share, including if you have thoughts about certain things we've discussed. I'm always open to new ideas and new information. So if you either know something that I don't, which could fill up libraries all by itself, but, or if you, have further information of something we've discussed, I always like hearing, what else is going on or what else, people are hearing about certain things. So by all means, let me know, reach out via email. I'd love to hear from you guys. Before we go any further, recently I had a special guest on the podcast, and that was Cade Moya of Australia, who created and operates the Believe podcast down there. And yeah, what a great show. He does a phenomenal job. It was a real pleasure to meet Cade and have him on the show, and we've become great friends, and as part of our continuing friendship and just trying to help raise awareness of each other's podcasts, I'm going to play a little trailer right now so you guys can get a flavor of what Cade's show is all about.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just like the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
My name is Cade Moya, the host of Believe, Paranormal and UFO Radio. Each week, I interview people who have had encounters with Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, monsters, and the unknown. You can find Believe, Paranormal and UFO Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and most other podcast platforms. Subscribe today if you believe.
So definitely check out Cade's show, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great show, and obviously he takes a lot of love and pride in what he does and puts out one of the better shows out there that I've ever heard. So, and not only that, he's a hell of a nice guy and, we can always use support from new listeners. So, I know you guys will check it out and, you'll be pleased that you do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get on with tonight's show. Tonight, we're going to discuss the Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, the Grassman, the Skunk Ape, the Yaren, the Yowie, the Wood Booger. There's so many names all across the world that describe these incredible beings. And I know that's what that says to me is that this is an incredibly intelligent and adaptable creature that can survive pretty much anywhere on the face of the earth. There doesn't seem to be too many ranges that they aren't encountered in. With the United States alone, the only state that has no claims to my knowledge of Bigfoot activity is Hawaii, which stands to reason, being such an isolated island out there. I suppose that would be pretty hard for them to get to, but they seem to be everywhere else, from Alaska to the lower 48 and all, you know, all over the place. So I thought tonight we would take some time and just read different accounts from across our nation here in the U.S. And I think that not only does it show the proliferation of these beings around our nation, but it also shows their abilities to survive. And I think that that's nothing short of amazing. So let's get started, and why not just start in Alaska? Here's Alaska. This report comes from, it was published in the Tundra Drums in Bethel, Alaska in February 1993. It's actually a newspaper report. And so it says, "Hairy man tells hunter to leave us alone." Kodiak resident Dan Jacklin is sure he's had several encounters with what some Alaskan natives called the hairy man, the creature known in the Pacific Northwest as Bigfoot. He's also sure the creatures have given him a distinct message: leave us alone. Jacqueline's fascination with the creatures goes back to a cold morning in 1979 in the remote Etelin Islands near Wrangell. He and his hunting partner were hoping to harvest some of the deer they knew inhabited an alpine meadow at the head of a fjord. Jacqueline wrote the following about his experience. "The deer we were hunting were at an elevation of about 700 feet. We arrived in an inlet just before dark in the late fall. My partner did not trust the anchorage or the weather, so he opted to stay in the boat while I climbed up to where we knew the deer to be spending the night. I found a bench and folded myself up into a large piece of visqueen in my sleeping bag on a small outcropping about 8 feet above a well-worn trail. My friend was to meet me at this spot before dawn the next morning, and we knew we would bag some deer easily in the nearby meadow just after it got light enough to shoot. We'd seen deer here several times, but had never taken advantage of the fact. Just before I went to sleep, I remember seeing the mast light on the boat in the inlet, imagining the boom hung with our limit of deer. I was awakened before dawn around 1 o'clock, and my sleeping bag was jerked out from under me instantly, like a magician does with the tablecloth and the glass. I awoke the moment it happened and curled up into a fetal position, freezing my fanny. I lay there for a few seconds trying to figure out what had happened. I figured something had either happened to the boat, or my pal had just somehow spotted a trough of fat deer. I sat up and pulled on my boots, looking for my mate to explain what was going on. I was still not fully awake for fear of scaring the deer. I refrained from calling out to my friend. It had snowed almost an inch since I went to sleep, and peering over the ledge, I could see people tracks in the snow leading up the hill towards the meadow. I grabbed my rifle and slogged down the trail, peering on the ground in the dark, wondering how and why my somewhat elderly companion had chosen that unusual method of rousing me from the sack. I was stepping in the footprints of the snow, and they were dark and easy to see, and it was starting to think my partner had not been the one to zip my bag out from under me. Then realization struck me, and I was gripped with fear. The tracks I was so carefully stepping in were not human. They were the imprints of bare feet, but almost twice the size of my own size 10 boots. This is not real, I thought. I couldn't hear anything except the snowflakes falling gently to the ground, and every hair on my body was erect, sensing the air for the obvious logical solution. I cannot shoot anything, I told myself. This is a very carefully planned prank, and all I need is to lose my control and end up hurting someone. I double-checked the safety on the rifle and determined that this joke was going to be on them. Cool as a cucumber, I walked up another few steps up the hill where I would be able to see the crest and the rise I was on. There was a large hemlock tree, and I decided to climb and wait out the pranksters who were trying to scare me out of my wits. Checking the sky, I noticed that within a few minutes the clouds would reveal the full moon, provide me with enough light to see what was going on. I took a few more steps, marveling at the perfection that these guys had achieved with the footprints, and then I knew it was no joke. I felt an unmistakable sense of warning as clearly as if someone had spoken. I stopped and looked up, 15 feet away, one hand on his hip, the other gripping a branch of the hemlock that was just above my head, was the biggest, hairiest guy on two legs I ever want to see. Without thinking, I started to thumb the safety off. He turned his head to stare at me, straight in the eyes. His teeth were showing, but it was not a snarl or a grin. I want to say it was a knowing smile. I knew I could place a killing shot, but I also knew it would be wrong, even criminal. He was saying to me with all the power of the spirit, "Leave me alone." One instant he was there, and the next he turned and fled silently into the woods. At first I thought it was just a dream, but then I could feel that spirit like a mist on the forest wanting to be left alone. Jacqueline said he recalled little as he ran and tumbled down the hill to the beach, hollering all the way. His partner, who was waiting on the beach, insisted he made the trip down in half the usual time. After daylight, the two retraced Jacqueline's steps up the hillside. The footprints he had followed earlier measured 17 inches long and 5 or 6 inches wide. The impressions left in the mossy ground convinced them the creature weighed 600 to 800 pounds. When they measured from the ground to the hemlock branch the creature had grasped as he turned, they found the distance was 9.5 feet. "My messenger was 7.5 to 8 feet tall," Jacqueline said. He said the creature looked very much like the one portrayed in the movie Harry and the Hendersons. This one was equally as large, but more lean. He had long, silky hair on his arms, and it was a good 6 inches long, and he walked erect. He was quiet and made no sound. He was graceful. His movements were graceful. I couldn't see his face too well, but it seemed like his skin was leathery. His eyes were dark. He had a glint in his eye. He had intelligence. A short time after that encounter, he said, the Wrangell Sentinel carried a photograph taken from the air of the track of a two-legged creature in the deep snow of the mountains. Jacqueline, who is 40, was raised on a homestead in the Talkeetna Mountains and spent his share of time in the Alaskan bush. He realizes that telling his story will convince some people he is more in the business of hot air than cold. But as he says, "I've spent enough time in the woods to know the difference between when something is scaring me and I'm scaring myself. There is no question in my mind about what I saw." Twice more during the 5 years he trapped in the area, he became convinced the creatures were nearby and letting him know he was not welcome. A year and a half after the first incident, he set 40 to 50 traps in a new area rich with mink sign, only to come back the next day to find the traps had all been sprung. Thinking his adversary was maybe a crafty wolf, he moved some of the and reset some, and when he returned the next day, the traps were again sprung, but there was a stick left in one, clearly not something one would expect of a wolf. Again, he reset some of the traps and moved others, and he returned the third day, again beaching his skiff in the same spot and following the same paths to avoid spreading his scent. All his traps were gone. As he walked along the trail, pondering the mystery, he found himself following what he thought were his own tracks. And then I realized these were alongside the trail, and that I always stuck to the trail. The stride was 1.5 times my usual stride, 5 to 6 feet, and they left a deep impression in the moss, and I realized it was the Sasquatch, giving me a warning not to be in the area. As I launched the skiff, I heard a rattling down in the water. I looked down, and the traps were in a pile by the skiff. Jacqueline said he knew the area well and knew there were no other people in the area. In spite of the signs, the area would provide lucrative furs. He said the old trap sign he found told him it had not been trapped since 1939. I pulled out of the creek. I didn't disturb any other places in that area, he said. Sometime later, in another remote spot in the islands, he was in the process of putting together a cedar shake shed as a place to store his gear. He had felled a hefty cedar and was hand-splitting the shakes from it, and his dog began acting strangely. Henry wasn't afraid of anything, not even a wolf. Most dogs are terrified of even the smell of a wolf, he said. This time, the usually unruffled dog started to whine and crawled on his belly to the skiff. He climbed into the skiff without permission, something he had been trained never to do, and hunkered down under a seat. Jacqueline had first dragged him out, but the dog continued to act terrified. And that made me think, so I took a rifle and walked in a 100-foot circle, and then I stopped. I knew I wasn't alone in the woods. So I got in my skiff, and I left. Motoring back later, he found the huge cedar he had been working on had been carried to the bank and dumped into the cove. Without going ashore, he turned the skiff around and left. I didn't want to give any indication that I would go against their will. What an intense story, huh? Wow. So this was definitely a case where he was definitely told many times to get out of there. I don't know if this was all on the same island or if it was a series of different places he was going, but very cool story, very powerful. And I don't know, if you don't take all those messages, then you're definitely missing something. All right, so let's go down to the lower 48 here and see what we can find. I guess we can start in California. They seem to be the birthing place of a lot of our current and ongoing fascination with the Bigfoot. Of course, the Patterson-Gimlin film was shot in Northern California. So let's see what's going on there. Not in the exact same location, but another location, as it were. So I'd like to make a report about two encounters that happened to my uncle and I that took place in 1970 and 71. We were 16 years old at the time. Both happened within a few miles of each other, northeast of the town of Covelo in Mendocino County, California. The first was a rock-throwing incident that happened in the Eel River below Howard Lake. My grandparents and my uncle lived in Covelo at the time, and I would spend summers there. My uncle and I were very close in age, just 5 months, so we were more like brothers growing up. And this first incident, my grandfather dropped my uncle and myself at Howard Lake for a 3-day, 2-night camping trip. And we only brought our sleeping bags, no tent, fishing poles, and a Sheridan pump pellet gun. We had about a dozen apples and a few oranges, and we would supplement that with fish and small game, birds, etc. The first day we caught fish for dinner, and nothing of note happened. The second day we decided to hike down the mountain to the Eel River to fish and explore, and after a while at the river we got a little bored, and I had found a little piece of driftwood shaped really a lot like a baseball bat. So being kids, we started simulated baseball game where one of us would pitch small rocks from the gravel bar that we're on and the other would smack it with the bat. We did this for a while when all of a sudden a rock about fist size came flying down from the hillside behind me, and landed between us. We were very startled, to say the least. We yelled at whoever had done this to knock it off. Due to heavy brush in the trees, we couldn't see anything. My uncle thought it might be some of his buddies from town that followed us up here, but no one was seen. We moved closer to the river and continued our impromptu game when another rock about the same size crashed between us again. We really started to get pretty freaked out by this time, and we yelled that we were armed. Pellet rifle. Well, I know. And dangerous, and to show themselves, and when nothing happened further, we grabbed our stuff and hiked back to our camp. We had to go up where the rocks had come from, and my uncle carried the pellet gun, and I carried my bat. Tough guys and all. Anyway, we made it back to camp to discover that someone had gone through our camp, unrolling our sleeping bags and scattering everything in camp. We had our fruit in a small pack that we had hung in a tree about 10 feet up, and there are bears in the area. The zipper of the pack was open and our fruit was gone. Nothing else was missing, just thrown about. Well, we grabbed all of our stuff and made a beeline for the road back to town. We're not going to stay there any longer, and luckily for us, a family and a camper came by right away and gave us a ride back to town. When we told my grandpa what had happened, he was really curious as to why we were back a day early, and all he said was, "Darn hippies." Well, we got a chuckle out of that. We didn't know who or what messed with us, but we knew it wasn't hippies. The second incident left no doubt as to what was in those same hills. The next summer, my uncle had his driver's license, so we went further up than Howard Lake to a place near Hammerhorn Lake. And there was a stream that my uncle knew of that had a population of native brook trout that he wanted to show me. He'd been there before, as he lived in Covelo, and he was really a great outdoorsman and explorer at 17 years old. He was fearless at that age. We arrived and we started fishing, going upstream, and we were in stealth mode as this was a small creek and the trout would spook at any loud noise or fast movement. We went for a while and doing well catching and releasing many fish, as they were really kind of small, but we were really having a good time. We came to a large slab of granite that rose up at an angle about 20 feet or so, and my uncle started up it, so I followed right behind him, and we got to the top. We heard a loud scream from right below us. My uncle stepped back right into me as the scream startled both of us. Almost immediately, we saw an animal take off from below us and across an open sandbar. It was on all fours, and it took four steps. It made a noise on every leap that sounded like, "Woof, woof." And this happened so very fast that we stood there in shock watching. When it made its fourth leap, in almost the same instant, it stopped and turned around and stood on two legs, staring back at us. It was about 20 or 25 yards away, and we and it stood for maybe 5 seconds. It then made a huff noise and turned and walked away on those two legs. It only took a few seconds to disappear into the brush. We just turned and started leaving post-haste. I remember one of us or both of us saying, "What the hell was that?" We were in shock. Let me describe this thing as I remember. I got a real good look at it, and it was not anything I'd ever seen before. It was dark brown to black in color. It had hair, not fur. It stood semi-crouched. It had long arms that were kind of outstretched forward and slightly to its side, with its palms pointed down. And it did not have hair on its face or on its fingers. It did not have hair on its face or its fingers. Its skin was dark gray. Its eyes were dark brown with no whites that I could see, and it had a flat nose with the nostrils pointed down, and I think this animal was about 6.5 feet tall, My uncle was 6'3" at the time, and the creature was slightly taller. It had broad shoulders that tapered down to the waist, and I'd estimate its weight to be about 250 pounds. The deal about it being on all fours, if I was to speculate, I think it was laying down below the granite slab that we were on, and we surprised it. That's why I think it took off on all fours. We did not see it until it was moving, and man, it was moving. The look on its face was one of shock or surprise, almost like it couldn't believe that we had gotten so close to it. We had decided not to tell anyone about this so as not to be ridiculed, and we didn't think anyone would believe us anyway. We talked about this a few times and started hearing and learning about Bigfoot to the point that we had no doubt that we had seen one. My uncle was killed in a tragic car accident in 1977, and I've kept these things to myself to avoid ridicule. I feel that with all the research and photos and videos now, that it is only a matter of time for definitive proof of Bigfoot's existence. My family members are skeptics and don't really care about this one way or the other, and I think that maybe by reporting this here, I can maybe get some closure. It's weighed on me for over 40 years. P.S. These things happened over 40 years ago, and everything that I have stated here is to the best of my recollection. I may have some details off a little, and for that I apologize. Wow, what a story. What a wild story. I guess this is probably a good time to take the break, ladies and gentlemen, so we'll be right back with more of these stories from across America of encounters with the Sasquatch, the Bigfoots. We'll be right back. Don't go away, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back and back at it. These next stories, well, it's one story, but it's several different encounters, or at least a couple, but come from Harris County in Texas in the years of 1972 and 73. And it's really near the Big Thicket. And if you're at all familiar with Bigfoot, especially the research going on in the South, in the Texas region, the Big Thicket is the place that many researchers go and have had some really incredible experiences come out of there. So there doesn't seem to be any question that that is a really active area for Sasquatch. And let's read it, and we'll see what you guys think. This happened back in 1972, 1973 in a town called Channelview, Texas. That's in Harris County, just east off of Houston, off of the I-10 freeway. I really haven't told anyone about this all these years, but I will never forget it. I'm 52 years old now and live in Washington State, and I didn't think about it before I moved up here, but they have the things up in Washington as well. Lucky for me, I haven't seen one after I left Texas, but I'm not looking for one. However, I think I know what the one that was following me wanted. The first time I encountered one was the summer of 73, and a school buddy of mine, along with my little brother, went camping not far from the house. This was a place in the middle of a large field with four ponds in it that we called the dynamite holes. That's because the holes were blasted out with dynamite when they were looking for oil several years ago. We decided to put our two-man pup tent off to one side of the pond that we did most of our swimming in. There was another pond next to it that had a lot of weeds around it, so no one swam in that one. The bank was slightly elevated around the area that I had my sleeping bag, and the water around the pond was about 10 to 15 feet away. And that was the weed pond, and it was to the north of us, and the next pond was the one we swam in, and it was just off the east of us. There were two other ponds nearby. One was northeast of the weed pond, and had a small area that connected to the swimming pond, and another pond that was about 50 yards southwest of the campsite. Somewhere between 10 o'clock and midnight that night, everybody went to bed. I went into my sleeping bag with my head towards the weed pond so I could see the fire we had going about 5 feet above from my feet. And the tent was off to my left about 20 feet or less, and it was a clear night with hardly any breeze at all. I had my dog, and Mike, my buddy, had his also, and both dogs were lying just on the opposite side of the fire pit from me. The fire was getting low, and I was just about to fall asleep, but I could hear something walking around the west side of the weed pond heading my way. It was coming up pretty fast with long, heavy steps. I looked down at the fire because the dogs were growling and looking past me over my head. The footsteps stopped just as it got behind me. I knew the pond was 10 feet away from my head, so this thing was less than that to me. I couldn't move. All I could do was keep the sleeping bag hood over my head and keep watching the dogs. My plan was that if the thing tried to grab me, hopefully the dogs would jump up and scare it off, but all they did was stare at the thing that was behind me and growl with their eyes as wide as silver dollars. But they never moved. After what seemed like 20 minutes, the thing went on its way around the pond, past the tent where the other two were sleeping, and out towards the open field. And that's when I got out of the sleeping bag and went over to the tent to wake the others. Mike had his shotgun, but by the time they came out, it was too far away for a shot. Several hundred yards from the pond off to the east was a church, and they had lights on their parking lot, and the field had been mowed not long before we went camping, so you could see the silhouette of a dog running in the field between us and the church. North of the field was several acres of woods, and that was where the thing was going. It was big, with long hair hanging from its long arms, and it was moving fast across the field, even though it was only walking. We just watched it go into the woods, and after that, we grabbed all our gear and headed home. Well, that was the first encounter. A few weeks after the camping trip, I was at home in Norrell Street in Channelview, Texas, east of Houston, just north of I-10 again. We had a house that was L-shaped with a small storage room on the north side. Between the storeroom and the inside corner of the L was a concrete patio, and next to the storeroom was the sliding back door that went into the den/family room. It was about 9 or 10 p.m., and I was getting ready to go to bed. I was in the bathroom that was next to the inside corner of the L, and it had a window that looked out onto the patio at the back of the house. The light was on next to the back door, so you could see everything that was on the patio up to the side of the storeroom. As I finished my shower and was drying off, I could see the full shape of someone standing at the back sliding door looking into the den where my dad was sitting. My dad was in his lounge chair with his back to the door watching the television that was on the opposite wall, and although the bathroom window had water in it from the steam, I could see that the thing looking in was bent forward in order to have its head low enough to be able to see into the house. This was a big person, both in height and in bulk. And that was when I decided to wipe the window with my hand. I should have turned the light off in the bathroom first, but I didn't. And just as I started to wipe the window, it stood up, looked at me, and turned, and with one step was off the patio and around the storage room before I could get a good look at it. If I remember right, the size of the patio was 6 foot by 12 foot, so it had to take one step that covered about 5 feet to get off the patio. Anyway, I covered myself with a towel and went into the den where my dad was thinking he may have fallen asleep with the TV, like he usually did. But he was awake in his chair, and I told him what I saw, and he looked at me and said, "Yeah, I know, I could see the shadow from the back of the door on the floor of the den." I asked him what did he want to do about it, and he told me there wasn't anything we could do. So much for the second encounter. The third encounter was a few days after the second encounter. I was going to walk down the street and visit a friend of mine named Greg Smith. The house is about in the middle of the block on the east side of the street, and Greg's house was at the end of the street to the north on the west side of the block. That put it about 6 to 7 houses away, and I can't remember the time, but it was dark out, and the porch light was on. The house across from mine and just one house north was vacant at the time. Some of the kids would go to so we could smoke cigarettes and hide out from our folks, maybe sneak a beer from home and drink it with our buddies. Well, after I walked out of the house, I could hear dogs barking from the other street behind the old vacant house, and I didn't think a lot about it and started walking up the street to Greg's place, and as soon as I made it past the old house, I heard the dogs, and they were going nuts. So I turned to see what it was that they were barking at, and just then I saw this large thing that was in the backyard of the old house step over a 3 to 4 foot high chain link fence and start walking along the side of the house toward the street. I was about one house away by this time, and I could see that his head was even with the eaves of the house as it headed to the street. That caught my attention real fast. I kept walking towards Greg's house and looking behind me every second or so to keep an eye on that thing. It went to the street and started walking straight at me. I knew from all my hunting times that you don't want to run away from a wild animal unless you have no other choice, because this may cause the thing to run after you like you're its food. So I started walking faster, but every time I looked behind me, the thing was getting closer and closer. I could see the long big arms and long hair moving as it walked, and the steps it took were about twice as long as mine, so it was catching up with me. By this time I was just about to start running because I couldn't walk any faster, and just as I got inside Greg's yard, I hit the gas and ran up the walk and in the house. I didn't waste time knocking or anything. I just went in. Everyone in the house came up to see what the problem was, and I started to tell them what happened. And Greg and me, along with my little brother, he was spending the night at Greg's house with Greg's little brothers, all went out to see if we could see anything. The last I saw of the thing, it was about even alongside of a large tree in the yard next to Greg's house. We went over to the tree and looked around with the flashlight, but didn't see anything. That house next to Greg's was also vacant and didn't have a porch light on. Looking at it now, as we were standing around the big tree trying to make sense of what happened, I remember the tree was swaying and moving a lot. However, for the life of me, I can't recall any wind blowing that night. In fact, I don't think there was any wind. Weird, isn't it? Well, that's it. Let me know what you think. Huh. So, I wonder if the thing was up in the tree. I do believe they're proficient climbers, so that wouldn't surprise me at all. But we got more to read for you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. More to cover here, so let's see what's next. The next one's coming from Montana, which is right next door to me. I'm up in the northern tip of Idaho, of all places. It's just beautiful up here, but it's really beautiful over in Montana as well. I was just over there a few weeks ago investigating the Coloma Ghost Town, which is right near Missoula, Montana. So I had a really great time and can't wait to get back over there to do more of it. But we got another one. So let's see what this one says. It has to do with some mysterious tracks. So it says, if someone was playing a hoax, they did a really good job, said Messing, Bob Messing, referring to a number of unidentified footprints at a neighbor's house some 16 miles down River Road West. 8-year-old Austin Peterson discovered the footprints while he and his dad, Dean Peterson, were visiting their neighbor, Jim Roeder, near his shop about 3 p.m., January the 3rd. 87-year-old Roeder, who was working on a sawmill engine, initially thought the tracks were bare, but when he looked closer, he noticed a toe-like formation that made the footprints look more human than animal, according to Peterson, who lives next door to Jim and Gladys Roeder. I don't know if I believe in the Bigfoot theory, but the tracks were right there, said Messing, who has lived on River Road West for 17 years and has never seen anything suspicious prior to this. But what else could it be, he asked. Peterson and Messing searched for about 2 hours following the tracks into the woods about 100 yards, but the footprints faded off under the trees where there was little snow and the ground was hard and rocky. Messing said that there were hundreds upon hundreds of the strange footprints, which generally measured about 16 and a half inches long, by 8.5 inches wide. Wow. Messing said the footprints were more defined in the newer fallen 2 inches of snow in the open spaces of the Roe Eater yard. I didn't believe it until I saw the tracks, said Colleen Messing, Bob's wife. I was skeptical, but here are the tracks in front of me, said Peterson. I studied them and I think they're real, he added. Bob Messing said the footprints measured 16.5 inches by 8.5 inches wide at the widest point just behind the toes. Peterson said the heel width was nearly 4 inches. He guessed the square inches of the print that the animal weighed. He guessed by the square inches of the print that the animal weighed between 800 and 1,000 pounds. Messing said the tracks looked as though whatever made them walked from the direction of Eddy Creek into Roe Eater's yard and then turned around and walked towards the Clark Fork River. I couldn't prove where they came out of the woods because they faded off in the slush, said Messing, but he added that most of the area is hard ground and difficult to track. You could run a front-end loader out there and not see any tracks, said Messing, a 45-year-old contractor. He said that the footprints were easy to see in the snow, but rains washed most of them away the following day. Messing believes the subject walked up to Roe Eater's shop during the night when Roe Eater's motion light came on, whatever left it the tracks, turned around, unstartled, and just walked away. If it was a person playing a prank, we figured that when the motion light came on, the person would have run, said Messing. Peterson also found the tracks in front of Roe Eater's house. Whatever it was, it wasn't in any hurry, he said. Peterson said that about 3:30 a.m. the same day, he woke up to find his dog barking, and when he looked outside, he saw Roe Eater's motion light on at the shop about 45 yards away, but saw nothing. Sightings of the so-called Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, is a large, furry, human-like animal that dwells predominantly in isolated areas of California, the northwestern United States, and Canada. I don't believe that at all, as you can tell from the stories we've covered tonight. They're everywhere. The Sasquatch Watch headquarters in South Carolina, which was created in 1998, keeps a collection of hundreds of Bigfoot sightings from 1965 until the present. The Discovery Channel recently aired a special feature about the existence of Bigfoot. The television special noted that scientists believe that there may be thousands of undiscovered species on Earth. For decades, anthropologists have studied hair samples, photographs of footprints, and testimony from people who claim to have seen Bigfoot, with no solid conclusive evidence that Sasquatch exists. Only recently was it determined that California resident Ray Wallace faked the famed prints of a 1958 Bigfoot. Well, that was actually discovered a long time ago, but I guess I don't know when exactly this was written, so... but anyway, I've been out in the woods a lot and I've seen grizzly bear tracks and mountain lion tracks, but never anything like this, said Messing. They also found a large pile of dung near the tracks that they couldn't identify, and they had planned to send a sample of the pile to the lab, but decided against it. And Messing said they didn't notify any authorities of the find, but he plans plans to send a sample of the feces to Fish and Games, but it says five instead of send. I don't know. I don't write this stuff, ladies and gentlemen. I just do my best to read it for you. The creature definitely wasn't flat-footed, said Peterson, formerly of Kalispell policeman. You could tell there was an arch. Now, that's interesting, because usually, as I understand it, there isn't an arch on a Bigfoot's foot because of the mid-tarsal hinge or break, as some people call it. That nullifies any arch that might occur in the foot. But I don't know. I didn't see the prints, so I don't know what they're talking about for sure. But anyway, let's continue the story. There were absolutely toes, said Messing, who said it looks like a human foot, but slightly squared. It was absolutely not an animal that we would normally see out here, he said, and as I have never seen anything like that. Messing said they studied the tracks and noted that there was more pressure on the heel and toes, like when a person walks. He said they searched for additional tracks until shortly after dark. Messing said that after finding the tracks, he and his wife Colleen looked up information about Bigfoot in a foot titled Mysteries of the Unexplained. I think that was supposed to be a book. titled Mysteries of the Unexplained, and found several similarities between what the tracks they found and what was in the book. He said that most of the tracks indicated a 5-foot stride, but some further apart, which he said could have been a jump or something running. If it was a prank, the person would have had to have something on his or her feet, because there's no other tracks nearby. You read about these things, but to have it presented to you, it's really excited, said Peterson. The more I looked at the tracks, he added, there was no way they were false. We were running around like little kids, said Messing. If someone did fake it, they did a hell of a job, said Peterson. I couldn't explain it, but I had fun, said Messing. I hope no one does explain it, because I had fun running around like a chicken with my head cut off. Well, that's a pretty cool story, I think. That's pretty awesome. Now, again, I think that they're not necessarily accurate with their summation about these prints. Not that I'm a print expert, ladies and gentlemen, but I've literally looked into, you know, thousands of different resources about Bigfoot over the years, because, you know, I'm very interested in the subject myself. When it comes to the paranormal, it's really my bread and butter, if you will. But I don't believe that they have an arch. I think that that's not exactly accurate. I think, again, because the weight on a Sasquatch is so profound that their feet actually hinge forward further than ours. Ours are more like hinged at the ball of the foot, right behind the toes. But a mid-tarsal hinge would put the hinge just in front of the ankle on this larger species. And so, as I understand it, there should not be an arch. It's pretty much a flat-footed kind of animal. I think it has an extraordinarily thick and soft, you know, not soft, but I think it's got a lot of soft tissue on the bottom of the foot with a very thick, you know, pad of some kind of hardened flesh. I've understood that it's explained as much like a dog's foot, you know, that hard, I don't know, crusty kind of skin that they have on the bottom of their toe pads. So, but anyway, I think that it's pretty neat. And if it made some people become believers, or at least give it some credibility, that's pretty cool. I really hope it's not a prank. I mean, there are people out there that are working really hard to try to, you know, fool people for whatever reasons. And I think that that's really incredibly unfortunate, because a lot of people are working really hard to try to bring this to serious consideration. And these hoaxers are just dragging us all through the mud. You know, anybody that has a belief in this, these people are desperately trying to make them look foolish. And that's really unfortunate. But for whatever reason, they do what they do. Why they do it, how they do it, what the hell. I guess they got more free time than I have. But anyway, I just think that these stories definitely illustrate the wide, incredible range that these beings take and can exist in. Now, we have them coming out of Florida and the swamps of Florida. They are coming from the mountains. They're all over the East Coast, the West Coast. They're in the Midwest. There doesn't seem to be a range in the lower 48 that they don't occupy. Maybe there are more of them now than there ever have been before. I don't know. Or maybe there are just more people willing to talk about it than ever before. Whatever the case is, there's lots of reports coming out all the time. A lot of people are out there looking to see what they can find. And maybe someday we'll actually have some kind of official admission of the existence of these things. But, you know, again, there's mixed thoughts on that as well. I think my cat just knocked something over. Awesome. He's always exploring, ladies and gentlemen. But I hope you've enjoyed this show. Thank you again, everybody, so much for being here and being a part of the Paranormal Portal. You guys are wonderful. Thank you for subscribing and downloading these episodes. It's certainly a labor of love. The podcast is still pretty new, but the response that we've gotten is just nothing short of incredible. And, you know, it's really humbling and amazing to me, but at the same time, I'm absolutely honored that you guys are checking it out, and it really means the world. And if you know other people that are into the paranormal, please let them know about the show. If you know other people that are into the paranormal, I should say, hopefully they'll be into the Paranormal Portal, but let them know. Maybe they'll enjoy it too. Maybe they won't, but at least you gave it a shot. But we sure appreciate every little bit that you guys can help spread the word about the show. So anyway, be sure to follow us on Facebook. Again, we do 7 live shows, live streams on YouTube a week, one per day, Sunday through Sunday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. And you can find those shows by going to youtube.com/paranormalportal. And we have a pretty extensive back catalog of shows that we've been doing for years on there as well. So that community is growing really great, and we'd love it if you'd subscribe there. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. If there's any announcements about the show, anything about you know, any new things coming up, I'll be announcing it there. So if you're interested in hearing more about what's going on the portal, definitely get in touch with our Facebook page, and we'll talk to you there. But again, we got a Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L, and you'll find all of these links in our description as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. Good night, everybody.
betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.